This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who loves a great story. I am so happy today. We are going to wake somebody up in California, and I'm going to talk to her in a few minutes. But I just want to say I hope that all of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and that at that time when you were thanking everyone for everything, that you thought about writing a memoir. I am always so excited when a listener will come to me or send me an email and say, because I listened to your program, I started writing a book. And I particularly love the ones who come and say, I started writing a memoir, something for my family to treasure. And if you are looking for an example of a great memoir, so that you can start getting the idea of how to put it together and how it should look, I would like to recommend Ray and Trish Arredondo's Maria's Journey. Ray and Trish have been on the program before, and they are just wonderful people. And Ray got the idea. His mother was, her name was Maria, and she came up from Mexico many years ago, and she wanted to get a better life, like so many people do who come to America. And Maria was something, the idea for the book was always sort of in the back of Ray's mind. And then Trish jumped in, and as a wife will do, she said, let's do it. And the two of them got together, and it's with all books, there is a certain, when you are dealing with your family, there's research that you can do, whether it's old letters from family or you do interviews with family. There are just so many things available nowadays on the internet, going to Ellis Island records or going to census records, and to find, and of course, now with all this hereditary stuff, you can get so much information, and you can even find relatives that you don't know about, and then put it all together. Take these stories and write a book. And so I would like to recommend again Ray and Trish Arredondo's Maria's Journey. It's a wonderful starting point for you. It'll inspire you, and it is an inspiring story in and of itself. And now we are going to go to to California. I am so happy to welcome to my program. You know, Joy on Paper is a just always, I love when people are just finding the joy of writing. And Christine E. Bloom has certainly done that. Hi, Christine.
Good morning.
Well, you know, I love your writing. I even love your blog, which is amazing. So I will, but before we start, I want to play a song for you, okay?
Okay.
So hold on.
Seems like old times having you to walk with seems like still a thrill just to have my arms around you.
Okay, Chris, that was just for you.
Thank you.
Oh, I couldn't resist. I love that song so much. I think it's just so heartfelt, and it's so beautiful. And you can tell us why it is important to you.
First of all, was that Kate Smith who was the singer?
No, that's Diane Keaton, the original.
Oh, it's Diane Keaton. Okay.
Right from the movie.
I know. It's from Annie Hall. And Annie Hall is, Annie Elizabeth Hall, is the main character in my mystery series, the Rose Avenue Wine Club Mysteries. And she actually goes by the nickname Halsey to spare herself with hearing that song over and over.
Over
again.
And over. Every place
as
she
well,
goes.
As well as all the Diane Keaton impressions. But thank you. It was nice to hear it this morning.
Well, I was wondering if when you go to your book signings, if you do that impression. Do you?
You know, I haven't, but I do some impressions. Now, don't ask me to do them at this hour in the morning, but I will work on it, actually.
Well, I think it would be, it is such a lovely song, and it she does it so beautifully, and you know, you could do it. And I think people, they'll talk about your book signings forever.
And you, one way or the other.
One way, but it's always good to have a little hook there, right? And
very good. I appreciate it, and I will credit it to you each time.
Okay, you do that. And it's Patsy with a Z. You say, Patsy with a Z insists that I do this song for you because I love your books. Now, I will tell
you
something. This the series is so good, and it is so when I read the first book, Full Bodied Murder, it's called the Rose Avenue Wine Club Mystery Series. And I am one of those people, I am what you call a method reader. So like when I read Amor Towles, I had to drink my coffee out of a tin cup. So it's in a way your books are a little bit dangerous because you got a lot of wine in there.
I know. I've had people ask me, you drink 3-4 glasses of wine at a sitting and I can barely handle one glass. How do you do it? And I always tell them, it's just like how you get to Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice.
Well, they are fun books. And it's so wonderful. What I love is that, you know, you came out with this idea for a series and you just said, well, I'm going to do a series. So you had all the ideas there and sort of fermenting. Is that nice? That's a nice little tie in there.
Nice.
Fermenting in that mind of yours. Which I think is delightful because I've been reading your blog and I don't read a lot of blogs anymore because they depress me. But yours is just so funny. It's like the kind of blog I would write if I had the time and energy to write a blog.
Oh, thank you. Well, let me let you in on a little secret because it's just the two of us talking here, correct?
Oh, yeah.
There actually is a Rose Avenue Wine Club, and I am a member of this said Rose Avenue Wine Club, and it started probably 5 years ago or more, and three of the ladies who live on Rose Avenue decided to take a course with the local police department on how to set up your own neighborhood watch, and after about the second meeting, they got bored, and they said, let's just go home to one of our houses and open a bottle of wine. And that's how it started. I joined much later on, but that's how the Rose Avenue Wine Club started. I get people saying, how do I organize a wine club? And I say, well, take a course in Neighborhood Watch, and it'll happen.
It'll send you to drink, that's for sure. Well, you know, the I don't know. I just get such a kick out of the book. And, of course, one of the reasons, of course, is a very, very special dog. It's a very poignant point at this time because tell us about Bardot.
Bardot is an actual dog. And right now, because it's here in California, 8:15, in the morning, and she is kind of a celebra dog. So she's upstairs nestled in bed, welcoming the morning sun in through the window, probably lying on her back airing out her, you know, private parts just because it's been a warm night here. And when I got her, she was 7.5 weeks old. And I have a pool outside. And I was concerned because if you've ever had a puppy, you know that they take off like a space shuttle and fly across the lawn for no reason whatsoever. So I held her in my hand and I held her in the water. And she quickly got off my hand and started swimming around, albeit not very gracefully. But eventually, I couldn't keep her out of the water, and I started to put a toy on a step, and she stuck her nose in the water to get it. Then I put it on a lower step, and next thing I knew, she was diving underwater for toys. And I tossed a ball in, and it rolled all the way to the deep end. And I was in a panic because we'd been testing this just in the shallow end. And so I ran into the pool house to get a skimmer and get it out for her. And next thing I hear is a splash. And then I look out and there's just ripples in the water. And I'm in a panic and I'm screaming at her. And by the time I got the skimmer, she emerged, blew water out of her nostrils with the ball in her mouth. And got out proudly and shook all the water off of her. And from that moment on, she was the diver. I ran to the local pet store and I said, I need every kind of toy that sinks in water. So they had to fill a bucket with water and test out toys for me. And so then I raced back. And then, of course, I started taking photos of her. And that's how it started.
And she became famous.
She became famous not just from that, but a photographer named Steph Castile, who you may have heard of, published a number of books all about underwater dogs. And she was one of the first models, which again is why she's a diva and lying in bed right now. But
and I have spoken to Seth, so I know.
And she's been... She's on his calendar for 2019 on the cover of that. And she was on Animal Planet when they had a show called, you're going to have to help me with this, Patsy, Who Let the Dogs Out? And so she was on that. And she makes appearances every now and then, but her best behavior is underwater, I have to say, so sometimes we're not asked back.
And right now, of course, in the news, she, of course, is a yellow lab, right?
Yes, she is.
Just
yes.
Like President Bush's dog, which
Sully,
which we've been seeing so many beautiful photos of. And if I was going to have a dog, I think that's the dog I would have, because... I think they are just wonderful dogs.
They are, and Bardo, if I might be allowed to brag a bit, is very smart. Probably or possibly in part because I talk to her in full sentences all the time.
Well, I did that with my boys too when they were born. Right from it was funny. Right from the time they were born, I talked in full sentences, and it's funny, you know. 11 months later, they're talking in full sentences, and they're saying, why, how could that happen? And I said, I talked to them. Okay.
Yeah.
So, then you made Bardo part of the story, a big part of the story in your books.
She's actually my muse.
Yeah. Now, when you decided to write the series, you sort of had this goal in mind of writing a nice long series that'll keep you busy for 30 years, right?
From your mouth to God's ears, yes. I mean, Sue Grafton, I'm a big fan of her writing. So I was thinking more like 26 years, but that'll work, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, she was so wonderful. She was on the program many times, and I loved her so much. And we had so many things in common, Sue and I. And I was like one of the few people who could get all. She had worked when she was young in a hospital lab, and I worked in a hospital laboratory too. And so I would get all her little references in her books, like when she described something as urine yellow, I would know. I would know what that color was. So she was wonderful. But I think that it's nice. Sometimes people start a book, write a book, and then they don't realize they're going to have a series there. But you planned it out with a. Tell us some of the characters and that you just sort of decided to have in there.
Well, they're actually all based. Well, at least in the initial book, they're all based on real characters. And I didn't let anybody know this is what I was doing. So I would attend wine club and sit there quietly and just relish every time somebody did something silly or an argument broke out or we drank more than maybe we should have. And I just would then go back and write down notes of all of these things. And when the book came out, I was scared to death. And I took everybody out to lunch separately and explained to them what I was doing, and then nobody's names are real. Because I was afraid they were just going to hate me and I would never be allowed into another wine club. But the main characters, and they're all very different. And what's amazing is that these different backgrounds, these different cultures, when we get together, it's like we're, you know, we're on the Oprah show. I mean, we're supportive. Sometimes we get together and we just need to vent. Sometimes we have real serious problems that we need to discuss. And sometimes we argue. But in the end, I think we're all better for it. And we always joke that we want to have an underground tunnel on Rose Avenue because these ladies all live on the same block. So that we can go back and forth in our pajamas and have late night wine club parties. But my key characters are Halsey's best friend, whose name is Sally. And Sally is a statuesque African-American woman who was a nurse, and she's now retired. She's very practical, the opposite of Halsey, but she is easily encouraged by Halsey to get into trouble. And so that contrast is always fun. And then there's Peggy, who's one of my favorites and based on a real lady. And Peggy is in her late 80s now. And she's, to the surface, looks like everybody's favorite fleeced grandma that you just want to put your head in her bosom and give her a good, strong hug. But it turns out that Peggy, just after the Korean War, served for a brief period in the CIA, working as a spy at the Santa Monica Airport. So she still has connections, and she still thinks like a criminal when she needs to, which is a great help to Halsey in solving crimes. Then there's Amy, and Amy is the youngest member of the group, and she owns a frozen yogurt shop, and she loves to be in the service business. She loves serving kids. There's a school nearby, and she wears her emotions on her sleeve, so her cheeks sometimes are like a, remember the old moonstone rings? They change color according to her mood, and she can get teary-eyed at the thought of almost anything. But her heart is huge, and she's a great asset to the group. And then there are people that have come in and out for various reasons, so I won't go on because it might.
But they're all fascinating, and they give us a nice depth of personalities and a lot of backstories that are fascinating. So in Full-Blooded Murder, that's the first book, we met Halsey, and she had come from New York and with a from not a very happy marriage and behind her.
And
I love the way you describe her ex. And then now the third book now is, of course, the second book was Murder Most Fermented, which I love that title.
Correct.
And the new book is The Name of the Rosé. So we're going to talk about that. And I want to get into a little bit more detail about the third books, because that's the one we're promoting today. And I also
Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, this is fun, you know, and I think this is for book clubs looking for a book to review. This is a great one because when we, our local book club here did Amor Toll's Gentleman in Moscow, of course, we had a Russian dinner, and I can see very... Very much all the ladies will show up for the one with your books because, you know, it'll be a fun night. And I also want to talk when I've got to take a commercial break. But when I come back, I want to talk not just about the third book in your series. I want to talk about your agent, Sharon Belcastro, who is absolutely delightful and was on my program. And also about Kensington, because Kensington is just a wonderful publisher. Okay?
Great.
So just hold on, and we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest who is in California. Oh my goodness. And I am so happy to have on the program Christine E. Bloom. And we are talking about her books. She has a wonderful series, and the newest book is called The Name of the Rose. And, you know, in the first century, Roman scholar Pliny the Elder said that in wine there is truth. And the truth is that I love these books. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, we are going to have some fun talking about the third in your series, The Name of the Rosé. And I want to say one thing I love about, like at the end of the book where you have wine terms. And are you yourself an enophile?
I would say no.
No.
I'm self-taught, and I call myself a pedestrian wine consumer, so I'm more like my readers, and as I'm learning things, I'm passing them on to my readers. I wish I could tell you that I have tried every single wine that I mentioned in the back, particularly not so much for the wine clubs, but in the back. But I haven't. A writer's salary doesn't allow me to buy cases and cases of bottles of wine, so I have to rely on reviews for some of these things and extensive research. But no, I'm a wine drinker just like everyone else, and I'm always excited to try new wine.
And I think that's why your books are so much fun, because you bring sort of a just a natural reality to the discussion of wine. It's not too esoteric. We don't have to go too deep into it. Just enjoy the process.
Right. And I'll be honest with you, I don't get when somebody says it tastes like worms and lead and apricots. I mean, I like to put that in terms you can understand, like, it tastes like hot cocoa in bed on a Sunday morning. To me, that evokes imagery of what I'm thinking when I drink the wine.
That's what I think that's what we get from these books, that there's just a sort of a fun, just the way we would think of wine. And that's why I think the wonderful selection for book clubs to read your books, because I don't know, you know, you need just these fun, cozy mysteries that just keep you calm, and you don't, sometimes you just can't read another thriller or another terrorist book, or another murder mystery where there's blood and guts, and it's just so wonderful to have these cozy mysteries, and with yours, a little sparkle of wine.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the crimes are very real, and...
And the mysteries are good.
Thank you so much. It's important to me to reveal the things I love about Los Angeles, which are not the stereotypical things that seem to come to mind for people who haven't visited here. So it's important for me to share... things like the community gardens in the middle of a big city and the sort of patchwork of cultures as you drive down a main boulevard and look at the shops and the services and even the religious temples that are there. Because I don't think people realize, unless they've been here in Los Angeles a long time, what a special and what a multi-layered, wonderful place Los Angeles is.
And you do bring it out in your books. I think it's delightful the way that you sort of reveal the city and the people in it. And I that's why when I was reading your first book, I said, wow, I having been, you know, in California and lived in California, and I found it very refreshing that it wasn't all sort of the hard bitten parts of that we always get of San Francisco or of Los Angeles. And I enjoyed that aspect of your books.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now
we haven't talked about one character, and her name is Marisol. And she is my next door neighbor in real life as well. And she is, as I write in my books, very much something of an enigma. She seems to know everything that goes on in the neighborhood before sometimes even I do. And she seems to have some magical qualities to her where she appears and disappears and has access to things that can't be explained away very easily. And she and her relationship with Halsey, as I describe it, is a love-hate relationship, meaning that Marisol loves to spy on Halsey and Halsey hates it.
Well, again, as with all your characters, you have this ability to really bring them to life. I was really impressed with the way that you describe characters.
Thank you.
Now, when
they did all the work.
Now, when you finished your first book, how did you get it published? How did the process work for you?
For that, I have to give enormous credit to the Bel Castro Agency, to Sharon Bel Castro, and her fabulous editor, Ella Marie Shute. As I was working on my first book, I was searching for agents. And at the time, I wanted the book to be more of a hardcore murder mystery. But I also knew that I have one individual distinct characteristic that I can call my own in my writing, and that's my brand of humor. And so I knew I didn't want to give that up. And when Sharon and Ella Marie looked at my manuscript, they said, "We know that we can fit this and edit it to help you get it in the right genre of cozy mystery." And so we worked together on it. And when it was ready and done, Sharon and Ella Marie sent it out. And I think it was 2 weeks later that I had a 3-book offer from Kensington Publishing. So I knew that we made a great team, and we have done so ever since.
Well, Sharon is, I admire her so much. I was so thrilled when she came into the studio. I met her at BoucherCon, and I was impressed with her. And what impressed me was that she was so enthusiastic about her authors and about Kensington too, about what a wonderful group they are to work with. And of course, as always, Kensington has done beautiful covers for your books.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I agree. Absolutely. I usually give them, you know, a couple of word hints, and then they take it from there, and they have been, and they're very distinctive in a bookstore. They stand out.
And that's what you want. You want them to be really noticeable, and they've done a beautiful job. And to have somebody like Sharon behind you is so wonderful. And I've talked to many authors, and I say, if you can find somebody that really believes in your work, if you can find an agent who really believes in you, and that you can trust to just look for your best interests and get you deals and get you moving and keep you going, because as I said, this is the third book, and you really need to have a nice long series to eventually be considered for a television series, because these books will make a wonderful television series. Carol J. Perry, who is also a Kensington author and who has been on my program many times, I started interviewing her after her first book, and she's now doing her 8th book. And I think her books would be absolutely perfect for Hallmark Channel. Her books are called The Witch City Mysteries. And I so want, I keep, from my point of view, I keep in touch. I was a script writer, and so I have a section on my webpage where I'm putting the authors whose books I think will make a great series, so that anybody from Hollywood or any agents that I interview will have a look at it and say, "You're right, that would make a great series," or sometimes just a film, because in your case, you need a body of work for a television series. And now Carol's up to 8, 9. I think she's going to be on, probably working on her 10th book. And that's what they're looking for. But I think your books will make just a wonderful series, because you have this wonderful cast of characters. And of course you have Bardo, and that's always helps to have a great animal in the series.
Well, I started writing scripts, screenplays, as does everybody who lands in Los Angeles, but I did it for a number of years, got some options and a few other things, but nothing produced. But when I went to write books, in fact, people would critique my screenplays and say there's too much description in there. And so, funnily enough, that adapts perfectly to writing books. And so I write scenes. I think of scenes. In fact, the book that just came out, The Name of the Rosé, I think you'll know when you read it, but there was one scene in there that I started with, and then I wrote the story around that scene. So I'll let you guess, or let your listeners discover it. I'll give you a hint. It involves Bardot.
Okay. Well, one of the things I wanted to make sure I tell my listeners, I think your, as I said, I like your blog. There's just something charming about you in general. And of course, I was very pleased to see that you lived in England for a long time.
I did. I grew up there and spoke with an English accent, which is gone now, although I think I have some hybrid accent that makes me an enigma a bit.
Now, where did you live? What part of England?
Well, I lived in, ironically enough, Kensington. And I went to boarding school in Kingston. So I boarded 5 days a week and then came home on the weekends, which was just the best of both worlds. Because I got to be with friends, and I'm an only child, so I got to be with friends during the week and then spoiled on the weekend.
And get a proper British education, which also shows up in your writings, which is important.
Yes, thank you.
And I was born in Northern Michigan, but I was obsessed with Jane Austen as a young girl, and I saved my money, and when I was 21 years old, I bought a cottage in Sonning, which is near Henley, and I bought a 400-year-old cottage. So I lived in England for quite a few years myself, and when I came back, I did have a British accent too, and then I moved to Texas. which I sort of lost it.
And that messed you up for life, I bet.
It did. But it was lots of fun. It's a great background to have spent quite a few years in England.
And I think that helped form my humor.
Maybe that's why I relate to it so much. There's little things in it that it kept saying. When I read the first book, I said, there's something I like about this person. There was something that clicked, and I said, oh, I didn't know Sharon at the time. I only met her recently, and I'd already read your first book, so I didn't even know, anything about Sharon. And then I met her at BoucherCon, and I'm sure next BoucherCon you're going to show up. There's going to be a BoucherCon in Dallas, the next one. Are you going to show up?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I think you are, because I'm going to be there, and I want to see you do your impression of Diane Keaton. And I think that'd be really great, and maybe I'll join you on stage and we can do it together. How about that?
Oh, that would be fabulous.
Wouldn't that be fabulous? So I'm not shy of getting on stage anymore. Years ago, before I started this program, 3 years ago, I couldn't talk in public at all. I mean, not at all. But now I'll get on stage with you in front of 1,000 people. So, you have something to look for?
Yeah, I was a theater major both in high school and in college. So I'm not shy.
Okay. Well, we'll do a duet of that song, because I think I got a kick out of the Halsey's name. I just got a kick out of it. So I thought, well, that's clever. There's something special about you, and I'm really, really thrilled that I met Sharon and then got to you. And as I was starting to say about your webpage, tell everybody your webpage.
It's Christine, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, middle initial E for Elizabeth, and last name Blum, B-L-U-M.
Did I pronounce it Blum? I pronounced it Blum, and you're Blum.
You're Blum like the candies.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're Blum.
No worries.
You're Blum. Some people are Blum. The ones I think who right. want to be fancy pronounce it Blum. It's like Levine, Levin, Levin. Yeah, we have people who spell Levine like L-E, capital V-I-N-E. So, you know, Blum and Blum. Okay, Blum. I like Blum myself. I think it's nicer. So I'm glad it's Blum. Okay.
It's Blum.
It's Blum. You're a plum of a Blum. Oh, you must have gotten teased. So I think it's a great name. Okay. Well, so there it is, Christine Blum. And I was corrected one time by a guy named Philip Blum. His name is Blum, but he pronounced it Blum. And he embarrassed me and he said, it's Blum. It's Blum.
Well, I was not going to do that.
Well, you're very, very sweet. But I'm glad that we got it right. Otherwise, you go around and say, oh, she's so stupid. Okay.
No, I would just write a song like Liza with a Z, not Lisa with an S. So I would do a song about Blum.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Well, again, thank you so much. I'll just say Chris Blum. I like Chris Blum. But Christine Blum, and I think people should go to your webpage and read your blog. It's funny. I love the Santa story.
The mall Santa.
It's a great story. It's a wonderful story for anyone to just read and put a smile on their face. So again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. And when the fourth book is out, you make sure that you let me know the date and you'll be on my program, okay?
I will do it. I just handed in the fourth manuscript to Kensington. So I will let you know.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Chris. Bye now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Bye. Same to you. Okay. So her name is Blum and not Blum. Duh. This is so difficult. I don't know. I should have asked Sharon. Hey, Sharon, if you're listening, I don't know if you said it was Blum. I said it was Blum. Anyway, but it's B-L-U-M and it's Christine E. Blum. And she's a plum of a person and a really lovely, lovely person. Now, I have time. Yes, I'm going to play a little book buzz. And this is for another Kensington author. And we'll play that. And then I'll be back with a few messages. Okay?
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Bells, Spells, and Murders, a Witch City Mystery by author Carol J. Perry. And here's the buzz. Lee Barrett has landed her dream job at Salem's Witch TV. As a new field reporter, she'll be covering events live as they're unfolding. Next on her holiday checklist is an interview with the beloved chairman of a popular walking tour through Salem's historic districts. But it may be his ghost walking this snowy Noel season after Lee finds him murdered in his stately offices, bloody Santa hat askew. With her police detective boyfriend working the case and a witch's brew of suspects, including some bell-ringing Santas, Lee chases down leads aided by her wise cat, Orion, who I love, and some unsettling psychic visions of her own. When a revealing clue leads to another dead body, not even a monster blizzard can stop Lee from inching closer to the truth, and a scoop that could spell her own demise this killer Christmas. But don't take it from me. From RT Book Reviews, an entertaining story that keeps readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. Carol J. Perry has done it again in Bells, Spells, and Murders, just in time for the holidays. This is Rita Moreau, also known as Radio Rita, reporting for Joy on Paper.
Okay, well, thank you, Radio Rita, for that. She loves to do these, and it's lots of fun to have her in the studio. She always gets the giggles, and I love when she's recording. Now, on Thursday, my guest is going to be, and I am so happy that he's back this month, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. They are intellectual property lawyers, and they are the best. And I want to, they are my patent lawyers. I have 4 patents, and they got my, I think I'm going to get a 5th and a 6th one pretty soon. And they are just wonderful. And also intellectual property. When you write something, it's yours and it's valuable. And sometimes you don't realize how valuable it is until years later. You never know. And it's very important that you start off right and make sure that you register your copyright correctly. Make sure that if you have a marketable product related to what you have written, dolls, toys, whatever, that you make sure that you get your trademark. Because you have to protect yourself. Otherwise, you are in jeopardy of getting your product stolen. And also, one of the things that's important is just to protect everything that you've written so that if somebody comes along and steals it, you have recourse. And Bill Larson will be here on Thursday, and he will talk to you about your intellectual property. You can go to my webpage, which is radio-joyonpaper. Go there, and I have a form right on the front page. All you have to do is fill it in and ask your question, and he will answer it. And that's, every writer, remember, one of the things that all of you out there have to think of writing as a business. And on the 13th, I'm going to have on the program Glenn Erickson, and he's going to talk about the process of writing, about some of the things that you should know about just how to write, how to sort of get into the process. And I hope that you will tune in that day, because Glenn Erickson is someone who really wants to help authors. He's become a sponsor of Joy on Paper, and I want to thank him so much for that. And just to have his insights into the writing process, I think, will be valuable. So make sure that you tune in on the 13th for that, and this coming Thursday for Bill Larson. Again, one of the things that I wanted to make sure I remind you is that if you are looking for a gift book, you really have to go to my webpage. I have recommendations there. I've been interviewing so many of the National Geographic authors and editors, and those books are so wonderful. And also DK, which is Penguin, and they have so many wonderful gift books. A book you give gifts to people, and they're sort of lost. I would say if you go to a garage sale and you see something that's on a garage sale, that's the kind of gift you shouldn't give, because give gifts that will never land up in a garage sale. And a Nat Geo book, you'll never see one of these Nat Geo books in a garage sale. They're mostly, and the prices are really fantastic. They've really kept the prices down from like $30 to $50 or $60. The books are top quality. The paper is absolutely gorgeous. It will last a lifetime. It will last many lifetimes. These are the kind of books that are handed down. I have some books that have been in my family for 100 years now. And I would not give these books up for anything, because they are just wonderful. And they were, at the time, 100 years ago, they were printed on beautiful paper. And so the Nat Geo books, which are absolutely gorgeous, are wonderful gifts that you can give to your family and friends. And if you're visiting somebody for the holidays, it's a wonderful gift. And so I hope that you'll go to my webpage and get some ideas. I can't even, I was thinking, wow, if I wasn't getting all these books, I would so want somebody to give me these books, because they are just wonderful. So I hope that you will think about giving a book at Christmas. And especially to children, you really have to start them at a young age. All of the children that have been in my family, we've always started reading very early. And it has given us lifelong pleasure. I find so many people who do not and having worked in seniors' homes as a volunteer, the people who are the most vital, the ones who are the most interesting, are the ones who are reading. They're still reading. They're 80, 90 years old. I have a neighbor who's 100 years old, over 100 now. And she's reading. Not only is she reading, she corrects the books. So it's wonderful to when I get a book that she's read, she's marked in the passage, she's corrected the grammar or the spelling. And that shows that her mind is still, boom, active. And that's what you want. So books help you to stay young at heart and young in your mind. And I mean really young at heart. Some of the best books are kids' books because they make you feel so good. Like Eileen Spinelli's Thankful, which was just a wonderful book to read at Thanksgiving. So I hope that, you know, the more I can do, like David Baldacci, who is doing so much to help people, and David Baldacci and his wife, Michelle, to encourage literacy. So I hope that you will think of giving a book at during the holiday season. What else? Oh, I have so many things I want to talk to you about in relationship to writing. And I hope that over the next few weeks, I will be able to tell you about some of the ideas that I have about promoting books once you've written about how to promote books, because it is not easy. And I hope that I will be able to help you get ideas. Just this little idea of telling her, you know, when she's doing a book signing, sing a song. You have to do things. Or like Rita Moreau, she dresses up as a nun who is one of the characters in her books. Authors have to be very creative nowadays. So I hope to come out with more ideas for you. And what else? Okay, that's it. Oh, I'm just so thrilled today that I got to talk to Christine Blum. Sorry for mispronouncing her name. Anyway, she was delightful, and I hope you'll get her books and maybe get a bottle of wine. She has all the details in the back of her books, too. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in audible books, or if you're very lucky, to hear the words lights, camera, action, and to have your book turned into a mini-series or a television series or even a feature film. And it can happen, but it'll only happen if you start writing. I just finished NaNoWriMo, and I did 50,521 words. Whoa, and I'm exhausted. I don't know how I did it. I did it mostly at 4 o'clock in the morning from 4. Like Mary Higgins Clark said, if you want to write, get up early and just do it. And that's what I did. I took Mary Higgins Clark advice and I did it. So I hope that all of you, anyone who did NaNoWriMo, contact me and come on the program. I'd love to talk to you about your experience. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And he's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Everybody, have a great day. Bye-bye now.